I rode in a frog's mind, and you kindly rescued me. For as we all know, no one likes to see pathetic and helpless creatures swept to their death.
Thank you, said Rincewind.
The whole mind of fate is bent against you, said the lady, but all I can do is give you one chance, just one small chance. The rest is up to you.
She vanished.
Gosh, said Two Flower after a while, that's the first time I've ever seen a goddess.
The door swung open. Gahartra entered, holding a wand in front of him. Behind him were two guards, armed more conventionally with swords.
Ah, he said conversationally, you are ready, I see.
Ready,
said a voice inside Rincewind's head. The bottle that the wizard had flung some 8 hours earlier had been hanging in the air, imprisoned by magic in its own personal time field. But during all those hours, the original mana of the spell had been slowly leaking away until the total magical energy was no longer sufficient to hold it against the universe's own powerful normality field. And when that happened, reality snapped back in a matter of microseconds. The visible sign of this was that the bottle suddenly completed the last part of its parabola and burst against the side of the guestmaster's head, showering the guards with glass and jellyfish wine. Rincewind grabbed Two Flower's arm, kicked the nearest guard in the groin, and dragged the startled tourist into the corridor. Before the stunned Garhartra had sunk to the floor, his two guests were already pounding across distant flagstones. Rincewind skidded around a corner and found himself on a balcony that ran round the four sides of a courtyard. Below them, most of the floor of the yard was taken up by an ornamental pond in which a few terrapins sunbathed among the lily leaves. And ahead of Rincewind were a couple of very surprised wizards, wearing the distinctive dark blue and black robes of trained hydrophobes. One of them, quicker on the uptake than his companion, raised a hand and began the first words of a spell. There was a short, sharp noise by Rincewind's side. Two Flower had spat. The hydrophobe screamed and dropped his hand as though it had been stung. The other didn't have time to move before Rincewind was on him, fists swinging wildly. One stiff punch with the weight of terror behind it sent the man tumbling over the balcony rail and into the pond, which did a very strange thing. The water smacked aside as though a large invisible balloon had been dropped into it, and the hydrophobe hung screaming in his own revulsion field. Two Flower watched him in amazement until Rincewind snatched at his shoulder and indicated a likely-looking passage. They hurried down it, leaving the remaining hydrophobe writhing on the floor and snatching at his damp hand. For a while there was some shouting behind them, but they scuttled along a cross corridor and another courtyard and soon left the sounds of pursuit behind. Finally, Rincewind picked a safe-looking door, peered around it, found the room beyond to be unoccupied, dragged Two Flower inside, and slammed it behind him. Then he leaned against it, wheezing horribly.
We're totally lost in a palace on an island we haven't a hope of leaving, he panted. And what's more, we... Hey!
He finished, as the sight of the contents of the room filtered up his deranged optic nerves. Two Flower was already staring at the walls. Because what was so odd about the room was it contained the whole universe. Death sat in his garden, running a whetstone along the edge of his scythe. It was already so sharp that any passing breeze that blew across it was sliced smoothly into two puzzled zephyrs, although breezes were rare indeed in Death's silent garden. It lay on a sheltered plateau, overlooking the Discworld's complex dimensions, and behind it loomed the cold, still, immensely high and brooding mountain of eternity. Swish went the stone. Death hummed a dirge and tapped one bony foot on the frosty flagstones. Someone approached through the dim orchard where the night apples grew, and there came the sickly sweet smell of crushed lilies. Death looked up angrily and found himself staring into eyes that were black as the inside of a cat, and full of distant stars that had no counterpart among the familiar constellations of the real-time universe. Death and Fate looked at each other. Death grinned. He had no alternative, of course, being made of implacable bone. The whetstone sang rhythmically along the blade as he continued his task.
"I have a task for you," said Fate. His words drifted across Death's scythe and split tidally into two ribbons of consonants and vowels.
"I have tasks enough this day," The white plague abides even now in Sue.